Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my good friend and previous tenant of the back rooms itself, Mr. Spencer Williams.
Previous tenant?
Yeah, you look like the creature that's back there sometimes.
How dare you? So mean.
And speaking of mean creatures, we have with us also...
Just coming after everybody.
Managing intern manager Amy.
Hiyo.
She is here with us as obviously we are going to be diving deep into the mystery that is The Backrooms. So stick around as we dive into that, get into all the nitty gritty of that conversation. We saw the movie. We hope you did too. So we're going to talk about it. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us that opening opening credits.
Tune into brand new episodes each and every week.
Week.
On all your favorite streaming platforms and over our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at philosophy101. Also, we're on Blue Sky at Filmlosophers Podcast.
That's right. We got a website. If you head on over to filmlosophers.com, there we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.podcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune into your heart's desires on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
Also, if there's an episode that you're listening to that you have opinions on or whatnot, if you want to tell Amy, you know what, Amy, you need to speak up more. You need to start talking about your opinions
exactly
more. You can submit
a
form to HR. For the rest of you, you can actually drop us a line in the comment section down below. We'd love to read those. And yeah, we have a great time with those sometimes. Also, we'll give you the rest of the social links at the end of the episode. Last week was interesting with everybody, with Spencer leading. Actually, no, that episode hasn't dropped yet. I apologize. this is for future episodes. There's a future episode coming up where Spencer leads, and it was quite interesting and fun. And I'm excited actually to drop that episode because that's going to be a really, really banger of an episode. But you were talking about something before we went on air about something you were reading about summer movies, and it actually caught our attention. I want you to kind of expand on that a little bit.
I wasn't reading anything. I was reading
my
from
bad
my
for,
own.
My bad for setting him up to actually come in and not just be like, oh, guys, what about something? No, I'm trying. This is called the pitch. This is
what
this,
on earth kind of article would I be reading? Summer movies come out in
I
summer?
Literally, when doing research for this, when you threw it out there in the middle of nowhere, I literally came upon like 7 articles. Rolling Stone had one. Variety had one. Summer movies to be on the lookout for. I thought that's what you were reading.
No, like, no. No, I form my own opinions sometimes. I did not
realize that was a trend. And they sometimes come with mass followings. See, there you go. You're a trendy guy. That's why, you know.
Apparently. Well,
don't take it to the head. Just saying.
And that's why this is happening like this.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot Amy was here. Hey. So,
hi, Amy.
Hi, Spencer.
That's
I used to be forgotten.
That's normal.
So anyway, we entered June a few days ago, 10.
Yep.
And, you know, I was just thinking, you know, summer, it's the best time of the year. You know, it's super hot outside. You know, kids are on vacation. Yeah, that's happening.
Pause, time out. Mm-hmm. The only reason why you think it's the best time of the year is because you love to keep your house super toasty even during the summertime. You actually like the warm temperature, even if it's hot outside. Like, you like it to be like a warm, not hot, a warm temperature.
Well, you know, it's in summer, it's more energy efficient. That's
thing. Okay. I thought you were just, you know, a sadist. But either way, you know, that works too.
This is
too.
Not sadist temperature.
I'm just saying, you know, sometimes. So full disclosure,
expensive.
We used to live together, and I would walk into the apartment and be like, I would feel like
and you know what? You were breathing in savings. You know how much you didn't have to pay?
Yeah, you know what? You're right. You're right. Okay, continue. Go ahead.
Yeah. So all that's happening in summer, right?
Savings is what's happening.
What I was thinking about is like, so we know all the big movies are coming up,
yeah.
But like, is there anything that I'm missing? What else is happening during the summer? So I was like, hey, what kind of movies are we excited here? It's okay if it's the big ones, but I want to know, what are some movies that, like, you know, we are all interested in, like, seeing this upcoming summer?
Now, when we say summer, obviously we're talking about June is kind of the kickoff for summer. Yes. I mean, that's always been ever since we were young.
Because like Hollywood kind of treats it like May is.
Yeah. And it's like, no, that's still pre-summer. That's late spring.
Yes.
You know, but the one kind of, I guess, discerning factor is, are we counting the end of August as still part of summer? Or are we counting up to, because
we're counting till summer ends, which is in September.
When does September, like, I almost said when September ends. At what point, like, are we talking September 1st and it's over?
It's around the 21st.
Technically, equinox. Really? Is the 21st.
Yeah.
Oh, September.
I didn't know that. I okay.
Okay, you're not okay. What's happening? Because like, lots of people don't know when seasons end or start.
Because everything revolves.
I do too.
Everything revolves around school season. So when you're looking at school seasons, summer began when school let out. So that was around the beginning of June.
It didn't.
Yes, it always did. And then when school ended, that was when summer ended. That was just the mentality. I'm not saying it's right.
It's objectively wrong.
Well, you know, this coming from the man who struggles with English by itself is something else to be told.
Okay, but a fact is a fact.
You could call it a fact all you want, but if the masses believe it, I mean, look at the way the state of this nation right now.
This is how we got alternative facts, Eddie. You need to be careful.
I'm just saying fake news. So September 21st is what I'm hearing. Okay.
Yeah, roughly. So it's fine if it's like 2 days after.
So we're looking at roughly almost 3.5 months.
Yes, roughly.
So according to, and mind you, yes, whatever facts, whatever Amy's looking at, whatever Equinox crystal gem powered thing she's looking over there. No, what I am also looking at is how Hollywood identifies as what's a summer movie versus what turns into a Oscar season movie, which are two different things. Mm-hmm. Summer season ends in August because September is the beginning of awards season. From September, October, November, and through the end of December, that is all award season. Mm-hmm. So every amount of marketing that is going into those months is completely towards movies that studios are actively shooting to skyrocket their notoriety within the awards panels. So that's why... Again, and I talk about this example quite often, this comparison, but that is the reason why movies like Sing Street, which was a phenomenal movie, got completely drowned out by all the noise that came out because of La La Land. Those came out in the same year, but Sing Street came out in July, La La Land came out in September. Mm. So again, it's also based on how the studios market these movies. January, February, and March, typically throwaway seasons. If they're not really seeing a movie that's going to move a lot, they'll throw it out there for test audiences to see. Or it's usually the pickups where they pick up from the end of award season for the masses to watch if a movie went into limited release.
Mm.
So, but back to your question. So, summer movies.
Yeah.
Ames, I would actually like to hear yours first.
So, I'm not allowed to go into September.
No, you are.
No, you are. I was. Okay. So the thing is, again,
it was a discussion that's on time.
Yeah. And that's where I was like, if I'm going into September, I'm going to have more movies that I'm excited to see versus. Sorry, and I'll stay on the bell.
Yeah. I was like,
I turned to look at Spencer. You're doing this and you're
getting the Doppler effect going on.
You can't have that.
I mean, but then Amy does actually bring up a great question. Is it marketed as a summer movie at that point? Like, if you look
I'm sorry. The only qualification I had was, does it come out during the summer months? If the answer was yes, then I counted it as a summer movie.
Then we'll use that qualification. So from June all the way through September 21st.
Okay.
And since you're leading this, how many picks are we choosing here?
Two.
Okay.
Keep it nice and short.
Yeah, there you go. Look at that frowny face. That's right.
He spelled Amy, so much.
Amy had like already 12 on the list with one honorable mention. Two on that list. You hear that there?
I didn't want to be here all day. I thought
intern manager managing intern manager emotions.
Because when it was in June, July, August, I could give you two clear. Now you gave me till September, there was four, and I'm like,
Too bad, sweetheart.
Most excited. You got to pick by that.
Oh, okay. Then I'm going to go I have to find it.
Are you yodeling now?
Then I am going to go with, there we go. August 28th, Coyote versus Acme.
Oh, that was the one that was on my list. Only because it was so interesting. I'm like, what is this movie going to be like?
It's shenanigans, and the fact that this thing has fought so hard to get out, just period. I'm like, yes, this is on my list. Yeah. I am excited. And we've already talked about, like, there's a little standard list of summer blockbusters we're already excited for, but this was one of the ones that I'm like, you're sneaking in right at the end. And I want to be there for that.
Is it right at the end? Because we talked about August all the way through September 21st.
August 28th.
No, it's one of those movies that I feel like definitely is a much needed breath of fresh air. And the fact that it got so suppressed, it was more like, I don't know if it was going to have as big a reception as it has now when it first dropped because of how much of a pariah that movie became because of Warner Brothers Studios. It's like you guys made this become this like Maltese Falcon kind of entity where nobody knows essentially what it's going to like, what's in it outside of just the basic trailer. But the fact is that people want it. Like they don't know what it is, but they just want it because somebody tried to tell them they couldn't have it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's going to be an interesting movie. So what's your second one?
My second one, because of the ones I'm going into September, on September 11th, we're getting Practical Magic 2. This is what happens when you give me till September.
Yeah, that's a fall movie. That just feels like a fall movie.
It feels like a fall movie.
It's like,
but
the vibe of it, I will say, is fall. Yeah, but it is in summer, so.
That was the thing that, like, I was like, wow, this is really weird.
It should be October, to be perfectly honest.
October or
unless it was going up against other movies that were big coming out in October. Why chance it to go in October when September is technically a fall month? You start the fall season in September.
Not really.
Listen, it's before Equinox.
Look, if they start selling Halloween candy in August, it is the fall month.
They
do.
Okay. Because they start selling Christmas stuff in October. So you're saying October's a winter month?
Have you seen Nightmare Before Christmas?
Don't
just saying.
Start with that.
I have to say, Practical Magic 2 looks interesting, but I think what drove me more to wanting to see it, I think, is having to hear how much Amy gives away, especially at times too much, about the books and the backstories and all this. And she's, we literally were watching the trailer and she gave away a really big part that I'm pretty sure was like, I'm pretty sure nobody's really supposed to recognize that right off the bat because these books, I don't know how wide the fan base is. And if people know, I doubt it. But like if people know out there, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. And
you just said you doubt it.
Yeah.
It's Alice freaking Hoffman. I'm sorry. Where have you been for the last, I don't know, 30 years?
Reading other books.
Yeah. So these ones.
Yeah. Which again, but the fact is like, I don't know how large the community is to the point to where they know all those subtle things that were in the trailer. But Amy just was like, oh yeah, this means that. And I'm like, what? And she's like, oh yeah. Cause the book said this, this, and that, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you probably just gave away something important. She's like, oh, I'm like, so.
Well, you have 3 months to forget it.
He'll forget it before that.
No, I won't. The trailer came out when? Like 2 months ago? Have I forgotten it yet?
I don't know.
Am I still upset about it? Yes.
Probably.
So thank you.
You're cross about a lot of things.
But it's definitely an interesting movie that I think has a lot of anticipation. Summer, maybe not so much. Maybe like a good transition movie, I guess would probably be another way to call it. Which from the summer months into fall.
I was crossed that it wasn't pushed farther out to the end of September into October.
But again, that also depends on like what else it's going to be fighting against during those weekends, you know? I think I'll go next since Spencer's, you know, the one who started this whole thing. Honestly, because I know nobody else is going to talk about it here. I think one of the biggest things that I am looking forward to, excuse me, had a burp, is honestly, and mind you, in spite of this director's, I guess, interesting personal beliefs, because I've heard several different things, and mind you, I'm not supporting the director here, I'm supporting the art, but I'm actually excited to see on August 7th, Eli Roth's Ice Cream Man. I'm hoping it's based off of the comic book series. There hasn't been enough information in the trailers to really identify that. And I haven't read too much of the actual series to tell you whether or not it's right. All I know is that there are elements in the comic books that do show me a little bit of like reminiscence to what I'm watching in the trailers. But that could also just be me like impressing my own thoughts on it. So I don't know. And I don't know if there's been any information as to like that's been released around it. But it very much feels like something you would have recalled if you would have seen like the original. And I say original not because this is based on that, but there was a movie in the 90s called Ice Cream Man with what's his name? Ron Howard's brother. What's his name? The one that Ron Howard always puts in all his movies.
Yeah, I can see his face, but I cannot remember his name.
What is it? What? Clint Howard. No, not Clint Howard. I have no idea. What is his name?
Dun, dun, dun.
We have a researcher here somewhere. But he played like this psychotic ice cream man that drove around and killed people psychotically.
Clint Howard, you're right.
It was. Oh, okay, yeah. Cool. So
he just looks different in all of his pictures now.
Poor guy. We're
used to him like this, oh. But you're seeing him with extra hairs.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, he that was a very psychotic thing. And I don't know if there's any correlation between those two. But again, my hope is there's some kind of, you know, connection. Either way, whichever one that's connected, I'm actually excited to see. It looks really trippy. And if there's anything that I've learned from Zach Cregger's Weapons is that children in this day and age are scary. So.
Yeah, that's very true.
Wow. No very. Thoughts at all. No one's going to pick that up. Wow,
what just, you want us to talk about children being
no,
scary?
No.
Well, children are scary. I get sick all the time.
I mean, he's not wrong.
Okay. For me, let's see.
Dude, I got one more.
I thought you did too.
That was literally just one.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Man.
And scoot, scoot, scoot. No off kidding. And away.
Man. All right. Well, the other one is just, I'll just throw it out there. August 14th, the end of Oak Street. Another one by, I believe, J.J. Abrams. Looks fun. Kind of a Land of the Lost type movie. Looks very interesting. What's her name? Anne Hathaway.
Ewan McGregor.
It's got dinosaurs. It's got children. It's got children who are getting chased by dinosaurs. That is all for me. Go ahead, since you wanted to jump in there. The Bioman, no, it's all good. I see. Spencer's just ready to take over. Go ahead.
I mean, you said I could.
Touché.
But yeah, that was the second one I had picked, actually, also.
Which
we
one?
We picked all yours?
Yeah, the end of Oak Street.
I win.
So I will go for my...
By the way, as part of your hosting duties, yeah. It's always great to have extra choices on the side. So that way...
Yeah, I do actually have two extra.
Oh, great.
But this moves from like... excited to interested.
This went from excited to like, well, it's a movie and it's happening.
No. Okay, well, one of them is definitely. Let's start with that one, actually.
All right.
So
it's a French film that nobody can pronounce, and it debuted at Cannes Film Festival, probably.
No, so this is supposed to be coming out, what does it say? August 28th, I think, is when this is coming out. But this is Legend of the White Dragon. I'm expecting it to not be good.
Oh, this is the last movie that Jason David Frank did.
Yes, and that's the only reason why I want to see it.
No, that's actually interesting. I mean, if anything, I think... On an actual honest note, like I think if anything, this movie is going to help kind of give in not so many ways the current atmosphere, if you will, of what Jason David Frank was working through or working with in that time frame. I believe I don't know if production ended when he passed away, or if he finished production on that.
That's a really good question.
I know his daughter constantly posts about it on her socials, Jenner Frank. But yeah, this is going to be an interesting one. I think more so for people to kind of have one last farewell. I know people saw him in appear in that Power Rangers special slash movie, whatever it was, on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So this will be fun to see him one more time in the iconic roles that he brought about, as far as, you know, made him famous and gave him a great platform to do what he does. And I say roles because he didn't just play the Green Ranger. He played the Green Ranger, the White Ranger, the Red Ranger. He played a Black Ranger. And I'm pretty sure if we had somebody who was super hard in the paint for, you know, the whole Power Rangers franchise, they'd probably name all the rest of them. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, I actually can agree on that interest that you were talking about, because again, and I think I can, you know, you can agree with this, Spence, that growing up as fans of the Power Rangers and seeing his kind of trajectory with what he did with not only that role or his role within that franchise, but also how it launched him into like arenas where he became an icon of sorts, and even created opportunities for other people to build upon that with his blessing, like Bat in the Sun Productions, who created a ton of videos of like, oh, what if Scorpion faced the White Ranger? Or what if Darth Vader fought the Green Ranger? Like, and Jason David Frank would show up for those.
Yeah.
Like, he would actually show up and do the part. And he would, hoo-yah, hoo-yah, you know, do all the noises, everything. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be a bittersweet opportunity to view it for a lot of fans. And I definitely am going to probably only be able to see it one time.
Yeah.
You know,
this definitely is probably going to be in that category, because it's going to be like a sad note.
Oh, yeah.
Outside of the movie itself.
Oh, yeah. There's probably going to be a whole like video montage, you know, dedicating the movie to him.
Yeah.
Which will make it even more difficult.
Ugh.
So.
Yeah. So that's. There's a lot around that movie.
Ames, any thoughts on this?
Power Rangers?
Since you're over there, just.
I'm doing the thing and the stuff and the thing.
But no, you already gave your answers. Why are you? Because, I was like, because, what are you still researching?
Because I also ended up taking one of Spencer's and I feel bad.
Don't feel bad.
You should feel bad.
See?
Why? You don't feel bad.
He That's on me. I'm me. Why would I feel bad? I don't feel bad. A good, you know, like as you did, a good host always has things prepared. You had other options.
Yeah, and I still have.
So why
option.
Are you feeling bad? He had other options.
I know, but there's just mildly interested in instead of. Are you excited or mildly interested?
I'm interested, like more than mildly.
Okay.
On this next one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to hear the next one.
Man, he gave me. It was his choice. He didn't just pick it because it's like,
it's coming out.
This fills a space. We're not gonna do anything else.
I'll be honest. I am a sucker for a space movie.
Okay.
I love space movies. This is not it, though.
This isn't a space movie?
No, this is not a space movie.
I was like, wait, where are you going with this?
No, I just like space movies.
You really do. That is not a problem.
It's true.
Wait, this, what?
I really wish this was the segue into the
I
main
have no idea where this was going.
I know,
this is a perfect segue. We can't ham-fist it.
Yeah. So anyway, my second pick, which has nothing to do with space, is a movie.
What? Wait, where did space come from?
Because you mentioned space. It. I like space.
Okay. I didn't say space, but okay.
You did.
No.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, guys.
I like how we're going to have to replay
this. Yeah, I'm going to have to put on the replay for that one. Go ahead.
All right, anyway. So this next movie comes out in 9 days. So it's called Leviticus.
Yeah.
So apparently there's some sort of violent entity inhabiting a person or something. It was a very interesting trailer. I'm also mildly confused, but I'm very interested in it.
It's very much in that vein of like, so first off, I believe it's like Australian.
Sure.
No, the movie itself, it was made in Australia.
Okay.
He's listening because you're giving information.
Oh, sure. okay. But no, I just, Secondly, the fact that this movie was is very much like a kind of scary movie, kind of like social commentary almost to a certain extent. It's very interesting. And I think one of the things that kind of caught my attention for it is like how much it mirrors like some of the culture that we came from, as far as, you know, that Christian culture, that Bible culture, if you will, of like, oh, well, you know, there's a fix for that. And, you know, Jesus is going to cure your gay. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait, what? and it's like, that's kind of how this movie feels, in that, like, what if there was something that was done when they tried to cure that gay and it wasn't like godly? Yeah. Like, what if it was quite the opposite? And that's how I felt when I first saw that trailer. I'm like, mm-hmm. ooh, this looks interesting. And the fact that it's called Leviticus only heightens the intensity of the fact that it's gonna, you know, bristle a couple of, you know, spines on the back of the Christian church. I wish I knew more. Like, this is the first time I've actually got the chance to talk about this movie. Mm-hmm. But I wish I knew more of like the intent behind it, because it looks interesting.
Okay, so I'm on the IMDb page for it, and a lot of this is just all over the place.
Oh, great.
Because it's labeled as a horror, also a romance, also a sci-fi, and then a thriller. And I'm like,
okay.
It's hitting all those marks, baby.
Yeah, so I'm going to just show up and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, all you can do.
It seems interesting, and I really hope they don't waffle it, because you could do a lot with this premise.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that needs to be said about this movie is that it does not look like it's going to be an easy watch.
No.
As far as like the scenarios that happen in it and the situations, there are moments in this that look like it will be both difficult in terms of like horror, and it will be difficult in terms of like just terror in the most human of senses. And I think that's something that really is going to make for a very interesting viewing experience.
Yeah. So like, I took the day that this movie comes off out off work, because I was like, I can only deal with one thing that day.
I'm going to watch it in the morning and then think about my life's choices afterwards. Well, mind you, all these movies are coming out in the next few months, and most of them, you know, as they're listed, are typically summer blockbusters. We're hoping that we get a chance to see all of them, and we'll let you guys know exactly how that transpires. But in speaking of transpiring, as we dive in, let's go ahead and jump over into our main review of the evening, and that is our conversation on YouTube content creator Kane Parsons' The Backrooms. This movie is one of those types of situations where, as we talked about in a upcoming episode, the impact of YouTube content creator movies seems to be on the rise, and we are all here for it. And this is no instance of, you know, pushing that to the side. Kane Parsons, who is a content creator on YouTube, came swinging out the gates with this one, and so we are excited to talk about it. So before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Bitter furniture store owner Clark discovers a hidden doorway in his basement leading to an endless labyrinthian dimension of warped liminal spaces. But when he suddenly goes missing, his therapist plunges into the unknown to rescue him, only to find her own reality bending.
Directed by Kane Parsons and written by Will Sudik and Kane Parsons, the film stars Chiwetel Ejiofor, Renate Reinziv, Mark Duplass, Finn Bennett, and Lukita Maxwell. A couple key pieces about the film: the Backrooms as a concept originated in a 4chan thread in 2019, but the location of the original image that that inspired the Backrooms concept, was traced to a former furniture store in Oshkosh, Wisconsin?
Yep.
In 2024. So it was traced back to it in 2024.
Yeah.
Okay.
They found the picture. Apparently the former furniture store that was the image that was posted on the 4chan thread in 2019, they figured out where the actual location was in 2024.
Gotcha.
It's a lot of, like, that's 5 years, man. 5 years.
And another key piece of information, over 30,000 square feet of back rooms were built for this production, which led to some crew members getting occasionally lost on set. Wow, that's actually really interesting. You know, the fact that the majority of them was like actual, like sequential areas of, you know, set design. So that's actually really cool. Last key piece of information, at 19, Ken Parsons became A24's youngest director, starting production after graduating high school.
Yeah.
What are we doing with our lives?
No.
I'm living. I'm cool with this.
Yeah.
Now good on him.
Oh. Yeah, good on him. No, it's good on him, but
it was a very like, oh, okay, for me. I was like, no, but good on him. And I was like, thanks for me.
No, it's great. The fact that
you know, all doing great. We're all alive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Ames.
Yeah.
Sheesh. It's just it's one of those things where we're seeing a lot more younger filmmakers. I guess it's not even a point to where you just call them like YouTube content creators. I know we've used that word quite often as content creators making films, but the fact is they're filmmakers. They are quite literally between him, Curry Barker, Markiplier, or Mark Fishbach, however you want to look at it, Chris Stuckman. These are all individuals who are now in the upper echelon, if you will, of status of filmmaker. And whether it succeeded or didn't succeed, whether if it was a box office hit or failure, the fact is they made it. You know, they got to that level, which is great. So it's very interesting to see the opportunities that are coming about more and more for that, I guess, generation of filmmaker, I guess, you know, just to put it plainly. Before we dive into expectations and first impressions, let's take a quick moment for your commercial break. And we're back. So
we made it.
Yes. Before we continue on, just a little bit of information about the movie. We are going to be talking about slight spoilers, so you are warned. Spoiler alerts ahead. Yeah. Let's talk about expectations. Now, as far as expectations are concerned, how many of the... Because there's multiple. How nuanced were you in the back rooms prior to going into this movie? I want to start with Spencer, because I feel like he's going to have a lot more to say.
Actually, most of my backroom experience is specifically with Kane Parsons' work.
Yeah.
Because I mostly just watched like his like YouTube stuff, and then I would also go over to Game Theory with old Matthew Patrick when he was there, exploring like, you know, what the heck was happening in that series.
Yeah.
So
So real quick, so yeah. You've been following fairly since the beginning.
Unintentionally, yes.
Oh, wow. No, actually, that's really cool. I didn't know that, because I only became a fan within the last like 3 or 4 years, mostly when the game started popping up. Like I didn't follow them actively when they first dropped. I was aware of them, but I didn't watch them as frequently because it just didn't seem my thing. But the fact is that I started to gain traction, and it started garnering like actual video games to be made based on that.
Right.
And then you get into the whole liminal space genre, if you will, of video games that came about, and all the Let's Players who were playing the games on YouTube. So I think that's when I came about into like revisiting that. But so you've been a diehard since day one.
Okay, so I just had to load up the video to get the correct date. But it looks like the Backrooms, or King Pixel's version of the Backrooms, started January 7th, 2022. So hasn't been terribly long. It's only been about 4 years.
We've been around.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 years. Okay. So then, yeah, probably less time for me as far as like, again, I jumped in whenever the video games became more popular. So, okay. Well, that's cool. What about you, Ames?
I'm not.
Exactly. That's why I said it's short.
Yes, it's me. I'm not.
Now, the question is, were you at least aware that they existed?
I mean, no, I worked in retail, so yeah, I was aware. No.
Like that's supposed to answer the question.
So I think it's also kind of that understanding that does this still fall into the genre of creepypasta?
I think the 4chan images were technically considered creepypasta.
Okay.
Before they got turned into the videos.
So just a quick like aside on creepypasta is like internet folklore, right? Like, yeah, and it's specifically created. It's short.
I mean, it's the same thing. It's creepypastas are the thing that ultimately built out and created the foundation for SCP stories. So,
okay. Just wanted to, for everybody that doesn't know, but for Backrooms, I was aware of it. I originally saw a photo, that started for Backrooms.
The photo.
And I was like, oh, I've been in spaces like that. I don't want to think about scary things. So intentionally, I have kind of avoided this because it would make it harder for when I used to work retail. I worked in a mall, and the hallways in the back when you're walking between shops look like that, and everything echoes, and there's noise, and there's a lack of human presence, and you feel very like... So yeah. No, in relation to this movie, I had no experience, though I freaked myself out.
That is true.
That's an entire thing to talk about, for expectations.
I literally piggybacked on Spencer when I talked about it earlier. That's why I let you go last, because I knew it was going to be the shortest. But
I was the middle.
No, you weren't. But that actually brings up a really great point, because Amy... hyped herself up so much before watching this movie. Mm-hmm. She actually had an anxiety outburst in the theaters during the film, and nothing scary was happening. But her expectation of something horrific to happen was so up there that she made herself sick.
Thank you for telling people of my... Yeah, I really actually did.
I didn't tell them you had worry poops.
I didn't have worry poops. Thanks for putting that on the air.
But I'm saying I'm not saying you had worry poops.
And I didn't. Yeah. Thank you.
But that's what I'm saying. You didn't have worry poops.
No, I just get nauseous and I gave myself a headache.
And you didn't have worry poops.
So literally, expectations.
No worry poops at all, Spencer.
Can you stop saying worry poops?
Worry poops. Worry poopsies. Is that better? That sounds more feminine.
Expectations. Thank you.
Feminine.
Expectations. I had hyped myself up so much that the night before seeing this movie.
Oh no, not the night before.
I had a nightmare.
Oh yeah.
Which was weird. So going in, mind you, Eddie.
Wait,
and I
a nightmare of what? I'm sorry, but like
you see never seen
literally in the back rooms, and I've never seen this. It was so weird. Oh, yeah. Okay. So that happened and I was like, okay, this is weird. And we were going to go see it the next morning. We went to go see it, but on the way
there...
We have
to see these movies in the morning so she doesn't get scared.
So that way I can have cat videos and happy things before I go to bed.
Okay.
I have a plan. I have a system. This is how I am ingesting this particular type
this
of content
the
in this
I
genre.
Now.
Oh, shush. but on the way there, I started having an anxiety attack because I was like, I really don't want to see this movie. Yep. I don't know what's going to happen. Yep. I don't like the aspect that it's familiar enough to me on a personal level. Yep. I'm uncomfortable. Yep. And so I literally was like, I was sucking on peppermints because it started to make myself nauseous with anxiety. And then we got...
I'm saying yep because all this she's saying out loud while we're driving to the theater.
Yep. It was happening. Yep. And then when we got in the seat, I literally was just eating mints to keep myself from getting nauseous.
And she didn't have worry poops.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's great. Thank you. And so we got through the movie. We got halfway through, and I realized things that were happening. I was okay. My cortisol levels were so high, I got a headache, a migraine in the middle of this, which made my nausea worse.
Yep. But no worry poops.
Yeah. No, my stomach, other than that, I was okay. But yeah, Spencer, I legitimately, this is.
You got this, babe.
Are you down?
I love you. You got this.
The answer is no.
I know he's not. And the thing is, I was literally just nauseous the entire time. Yep. And then when I got out, I was like.
I think, did you finish your mints?
Yes.
Yeah,
I ate an entire bag of mints. My lifesaver, Spencer, the little container.
Yep.
I ate that many mints. Yeah, so this is a reason why I don't watch horror movies.
No, this is a reason.
That wasn't even the movie. That was just you.
That's exactly what I said. I said the exact same thing.
My imagination is so intense that I can't be allowed to do this. But that was my expectation, Spencer. What about your expectation?
He did his expectation.
No.
We're on first impressions now.
No.
Yes, Spencer went first.
No, you did history, not expectations. You broke down of what do you know about the back rooms, everything else.
Go ahead.
So my expectation going in, I was deathly afraid that I was going to be deathly afraid. I cyclicaled this very hardcore.
Yep, she did.
Spencer, how about your expectation?
Okay, so seeing a lot of this guy's work before seeing this movie, I was like, okay, I definitely think he can handle this. So really, I think the only real thing I was curious about is that he, at least to my recollection of things I've seen, he hasn't put out a piece of work this long before. Hmm. So yeah. I was curious on, like, you know, is length going to be a possible stumbling block?
Yeah.
I didn't think so, but I was like, let's see what he's got set up.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the things for me in seeing or in hoping to see in the movie was the, and I was hoping for this, to see the lack of Hollywoodization, if you will, of a franchise that works great on its own, a premise that doesn't need a lot of dolling up through, like, whatever Hollywood can try to do, adding like A-list stars and making this crazy dialogue story and, you know, this convoluted triangle of love and hate between whatever. Like, it didn't need any of that. And I was hoping and really, really praying that this movie didn't have any of that in it. Because in all honesty, if you watch any of those previous videos, they're very simplistic. There's not a lot to them outside of quite literally how Amy reacted. It's based on, like, what you can envision in your own mind, what's around the corner. And so, yeah, you know, that's kind of what I went into it with. So we all got a chance to see the movie. Let's talk first impressions right outside the gate. And I guess let's start with Amy.
Why are we picking me? I'm supposed to be entertaining.
Well, we have the entertaining go before we go the information.
Yeah. So first impressions right outside the gate. I hyped myself up way more than I expected, and that let me down, which is weird. And I need to talk about it.
Yeah. I don't get it. What do you mean?
So I hyped myself up that I was going to be more scared, that literally I got to the point where things weren't as scary as I thought they were, which intentionally let myself down. My expectations were too high.
So you were expecting.
I unscared myself.
So you were. so you were disappointed because it wasn't as scary as you had feared it was going to be, and so your view of the movie is lesser because of the fact that it wasn't. It was actually something you were hoping it was, and not what it.
I'm not saying I was disappointed. I'm saying I am my own worst enemy. I hyped it up so much in
Spencer's
my head.
Eyes are
early. I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying, because for a brief second, it's like, I'm disappointed this movie wasn't more scary. Is like briefly
that's literally what I heard. That's why I'm trying to comprehend. She's saying that the movie that she was deathly afraid of may have let her down because it wasn't as deathly afraid as she originally implied it or expected it to be,
and that made her feel like
the expectations were lower now.
Yeah, I got myself so scared that I wasn't as scared as I thought it was going to become the end of the movie, and for me, that's disappointing in myself.
Okay, but not the movie.
No,
okay,
no. It's a me thing.
Okay, Spencer, why don't you give some clarity on this show, and why don't you tell us how you felt?
Okay,
first impressions. Oh my gosh.
I was like, okay, this is a good movie. This is, like, you know, very nicely set up. I have, like, lots of positives. I also have a little bit of issues, but I think overall this was great. He did a fantastic job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. I think this movie definitely, like, shows the trajectory of where the filmmakers that were on YouTube are going as far as the quality of movie. I mean, we saw this with Obsession. We saw this with Iron Lung. You know, we didn't unfortunately get a chance to see Shelby Oaks in theaters, but I'm pretty sure it did well as far as a film itself. And so the trajectory continued to only go up, and this absolutely fit that trajectory. And I want to say, like, the expectations that I had for it versus what I ended up coming out with were definitely the hope that I was wishing for. Let's just put it that way. But moving over to some of the cast, obviously we're going to talk about some of the character or some of the people in this. And honestly, there's not that many people in this movie. I mean, there's
very small cast.
Yeah. It is. It's like, what, four people?
Yep. Maybe.
Roughly
four or five. Yeah. It's small enough that really it feels like people that are in there that aren't Chiwetel Ejiofor and Renata. We're going to butcher your last name. I'm so
Rainsive.
Sorry. Rainsive. It feels like almost everybody else is a cameo. Like in an odd way.
I mean, it feels like they're absolutely like secondary characters to the main story. But I think the first thing I do really want to highlight is Chiwetel Ejiofor has always been a phenomenal actor in 100%. Everything that he's been in. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything where he was not a stellar powerhouse of a role. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was in, obviously us here at the table know, he was in Serenity. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was in 12 Years a Slave.
Both Doctor Strange movies.
Both Doctor Strange movies, that's right.
He did really good in the new Bridget Jones movie. I'm just going to say that, even though the Bridget Jones series is...
Did you actually watch that?
I did. He played a teacher, and he was really good. Like, and it wasn't just like a throwaway. He's literally like possibly a love interest for Renee Zellweger, but it's like it's him, and he's really good. And then he played the husband in Love Actually, I felt really bad. I forgot.
I forgot a lot about that movie.
But I mean, he's been in so many different movies. He's been a fixed point for like either confidence, for leadership, for courage. I mean, he was in American Gangster, Children of Men. I believe he was in a movie called Red Belt, where he played a martial artist at one point in time. This has to probably be one of the first movies I've ever seen Chiwetel Ejiofor be in where it was not clear to me as a viewer that he was an absolute good guy. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things where it's like there are some roles where like an American Gangster, he plays Denzel Washington's like side, you know, like his second in charge, like lieutenant or whatever you want to call it. And obviously that's, you know, he's a gangster, so that's definitive. He's the assassin in Serenity. That's definitive. You know, there are certain roles where he's more of the hero, Children of Men, things like that. Like this movie, his character's moral compass was not as clear. It was very ambiguous. Mm-hmm. And I think that made it all the more just interesting for me as a watcher of film to say, I need to know how this ends. Like, I need to know where this is going for this character specifically. So I got to give credit to where credit is due. And honestly, his effort throughout this entire movie really helps make the uneasiness of where you begin and end with this movie, which is kind of, you know, very significant in how it symbolizes the Backrooms as a whole. Like, who knows where it begins and where it ends. So I got to give props where props is due.
Yeah, he's pretty fantastic in this movie. But like, honestly, like, halfway through the movie, I was like, I have no idea about this guy anymore.
Yeah.
Because like, just like so much was happening. And like, he like, you know, gives the vibe that like maybe he used to be a bad person, but he's like in therapy and is working on it. And it seems like he's turning, but then it seems like he might be turning back. It was really fascinating to watch. I really enjoyed him in this movie.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. And I can honestly say there was, especially when we see him in the therapy sessions, you're like, you're watching him teeter on the edge of a knife. Like even there, you're just like, are you really okay? Are you going to be okay? Because it almost feels like therapy isn't working. Like he really shouldn't be in therapy. He should be doing something else. And then when you get farther into the movie, you're just like, oh, you weren't okay from the beginning. Maybe,
yeah.
We don't know where we're at now.
Well, and that also transitions over into like the other main actress in this movie, the other main actor, if you will, in this movie. And that's Renate Reinsev, who plays Mary, the therapist. And as much as this movie is about Chiwetel Ejiofor's character, the information that is slowly dripped to the audience about her backstory is also just as compelling. and everything that she goes through as a child up through her upbringing with her very disturbed parent, and then leading her to become the therapist that she is today at this point in the movie, is so confusing yet so like unfulfilling, because I needed to know what was the resolution and I know I'm not going to get it. And again, that's very indicative of just exactly what the backrooms are.
Yeah. And it was very like, I have to say that her performance, it was supposed to feel comforting, but you felt like there was
not at all. No, at like, no point in time did I feel like any time in her presence was like comforting.
You don't feel like her presence is comforting, but she's like, she's the therapist. She's supposed to help you work through it. She has books on tape. She's on infomercials. She's coming up, and everything about her feels like she too is just waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, something bad is coming and it's happening to her, but she's pretending like it's going to be okay. And it just made me like, and it's literally like a visceral response. Like, it's a physical response. I can't just verbalize what I'm trying to say.
I hear you.
Yeah. Her character, like it, like constantly, like even when like at the very beginning, I was like, oh no, like you've met a terrible fate. It's like, like the thing that's repeating with her. Like, I don't know about what the vibe is with her, but like you just like, it's going to happen at some point in the future where it's like bang, and like her life is going to be different. But one thing I really do like about like her segments, like most of her segments, is that a lot of it is like very specifically show, don't tell.
Mm. Yeah.
I really like it when a director and like the actors treat their audience like they're smart.
yeah.
And it's like, you know, we don't have to hold your hand to figure things out. If you think about it, you'll figure it out.
And I think that's also speaking to the genius of Kane Parsons, and the fact that even if you didn't get it figured out, there was still something in there for everybody to gather, like to grasp onto as a means to give them a kind of pull up for the next scene. Like it's weird, the comparison, but it reminds me a little bit about like Shrek, how in the movie Shrek, when the Shrek first came out, it was hilarious to children, and kids didn't know. They're like, oh, it's Shrek and Donkey. I'm making waffles. Yeah, whatever. But then parents watch the movie and they're like, oh my God, this adult humor is funny. Oh my gosh. And people are laughing legitimately. It wasn't like, oh, yes, honey, the donkey is funny. It wasn't like that. It was legitimately like, oh my gosh, that is great. That is funny. Yes, better out than in. Like, and I feel like with this movie in particular, Kane Parsons created a instance where not only people are being given the opportunity to show their intelligence and flex it, but if you're not intelligent, it's okay. You can still have an experience. This is not so highbrow that you're like, I don't get it. Yeah. Like, and you don't ever want to leave your audience feeling like they're dumber.
True, for
going through a movie and coming out, and everyone else is like, oh my gosh, you're so cerebral. This is that. And they're like, what happened in the 5 minute mark? What? Like, no, there was something everybody could gravitate to. And that's like, I guess if you want to talk about it in a more holistic way, I think that's one of the more universal things when it comes to stories like this within this type of genre, within that liminal space type of storytelling. It's quite literally like, this can either fit the size or it can fit whatever size you need it to. I mean, that's the nature of liminal space. So it's such a unique premise and a very well done execution from Kane Parsons. So. Mm-hmm. Moving over to the story, speaking about Kane Parsons, I want to actually ask Spencer a couple questions. Obviously, if you've watched any of the videos, you probably have an idea as far as the backrooms. The more interesting part for a lot of people isn't so much like how the narrative goes with the particular characters, but how much the space emulates the videos that have proceeded into the zeitgeist that is YouTube culture now, especially pop culture. You being somebody who has seen the majority of them, how do you think this movie fared in terms of recognizing what Kane Parsons built upon YouTube and what he built within this film?
Well, actually, it fits right in with his stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Because not all of it, but a lot of the other backroom stuff has a majority focus on the async company.
Yes.
So a lot of it's there. There's like one, like the very first one was kind of a point of view of someone who just randomly got shot into this place. But like after that, it starts to pick up a part of like why, like a little bit of why is this happening and who is behind it. So it slots right in with the rest of his work very nicely, actually.
Okay. So there's a sense of continuation from what he's building upon, or is it emulating it? Like, is it just reflecting?
It's more of a continuation. It's also one of those things where it's like, hey, if you didn't see any of the other stuff, as long as you,
it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, as long as you have a vague idea of what the background is, you're going to be fine in this movie. And if you would like to know like a little bit more information, you can look at some of the, directly you can look at his videos. You might also want to watch the explainer so someone could just like chop it all up and like actually lay it out.
Which
for you.
I looked at some of those and some of them were either like 3 minutes, some were like 15, some were like 50 minutes.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people who go way hard in the paint for this, this franchise that he's built. But okay. So that's good to know at least that what he, I guess, translated from his original creation into this one, there wasn't a lot of like interference with, I guess, creative liberties or anything, or
not to my knowledge.
Okay, okay. Ames?
What?
Did you, I literally just wanted to say your name to see if you were even paying attention. She's over here looking down and doing God knows what on her phone.
You said you were going to ask Spencer some questions about...
I just did.
I know.
He literally went on a whole diatribe about the YouTube
and
videos.
And that it's in line with the YouTube videos, and that if I wanted to learn more or to understand, I could look for an explainer who would help but make it a better linear story for me to follow.
Yeah.
That was the last thing he said.
I know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Some of the videos are out of order.
Yeah.
On purpose. Yeah. Because it's found footage, so it makes sense.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So talking about the story here, obviously we have, what is Chiwetel Ejiofor's character's
Clark.
Name? So we have Clark, who is a store owner who is going through a messy separation. I don't know if it's ever been recognized as a divorce quite yet.
Yes. I thought so. It was recognized as a divorce.
Oh, I just remember him saying that they were separated, that he was thrown out of his own house.
Yeah, and they were divorced, and his whole thing was still that he...
So either way, whatever the specifics are, that's not
a long thing that goes with him.
So he's still a little... He's still upset over that, which is why he's going to therapy and doing all this stuff. All the while, his shop, which doesn't bring in a lot of customers, he suddenly finds electrical anomalies within it and then stumbles into the back rooms in one of his showrooms. And from there, kind of the story kicks off, if you will. I do have to say, I loved how a lot of the effects within this movie were very practical.
100%.
There wasn't a lot of like CG moments where, oh, this is a hole, but this hole actually goes down into like a CG room or this specific space over here, although it looks like something that's in like a liminal space where it changes. It's actually a practical effect, which every time I see the scene that was in the movie of like him finding that door with the three locks, I think of that room that was in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, sorry. Yeah, so I'm like, man, Roald Dahl actually started this whole thing. but the fact is, you know, this movie builds pretty quickly and then creates this space where you think, okay, this is what you're going to be seeing. Because it does operate in two different kind of point of views. You have the point of view of like a actual film camera from the audience looking in. And then it transitions over from the first person point of view from a handheld camera looking in. And I think that both really kind of adds to the homage back to the original Kane Parsons videos.
Yeah, most of them are done through a handheld video camera.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I feel like the way this movie just escalates, because there's a point in the movie where that handheld footage stops and the movie kind of skyrockets up from like 10 to 100 right after that. And I'm not going to go into detail because you really need to see it. But the fact is like everything changes as far as not only the point of view, but also where we see the narrative of the story changing over to, until we kind of bring these characters back together in an instance. And even in how it kind of tries to slightly explain what the backrooms are, or at least who is doing oversight on the backrooms, I guess. There's a lot to this movie, and I feel like the first thing that I need to ask you guys is actually, let me start with Spencer.
Okay.
Does the YouTube videos actually give any kind of indication as to who created the backrooms?
Yeah, it's Async.
So it is that company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the company where in the movie, by the way, they have a really fun little opening thing where they show the logo of the company, which is very much indicative of the first video. So it's that company who created it.
Right.
Do they say what it is?
Their intention, if I remember correctly, was to be like basically unlimited storage. You could just like have like a...
So they peacemakered this, is what you're saying.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, gotcha.
So,
or a peacemaker took from that, I'm just saying.
yeah, to just like have like, you know, whatever. But then like it just kind of kept growing and kind of started interacting with the real world in mm-hmm. ways they did not understand or really intend.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because like you had like people would just be driving home and then suddenly someone would fall into the back rooms in their car.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool. And that's in like some of the videos. I didn't see all of it. I probably saw like the first two or three. I was, again, more interested in the games, but that's actually in the...
Yeah, it was in two separate videos. One where you just see a car in there. You're like, how the heck did that happen? And then I think there's a adjacent video somewhere else where it's a highway like traffic camera.
Uh-huh.
And you just see like a car just sink into the ground and disappear.
That's cool.
Jiminy Crispies.
Okay. So with this current movie, what are some of the highlights that you guys see within the movie that we saw in theaters?
Ooh. Let's
start with Amy.
So I had two, which was, I didn't expect that I would have any.
Yeah.
So the first one is going to be the Golden Record. So inside the back rooms, there are cutouts of a caveman, and they have a whole bunch of wires that are running away from him, and it's playing a tape, and it essentially is the Golden Record that went up on
Voyager.
Thank you, Spencer. And it's
50, I like space.
It's 55 countries, right? And they're all saying like hello from the people of Earth or from the children of Earth, but you're hearing it, and it's one of the first sounds that you actually kind of hear in the back rooms. I thought because of the way that it was playing and the way that Tweedle interacts with it, that I was like, oh, well, there's an actual person in here. And then coming to find out that I actually recognized what was playing over that. And I was like, oh, this makes me feel really smart. And I liked that. but I thought it was a really great idea to use something that essentially was being like a call and response for whoever would have fallen into the back rooms. If now that you realize like they're strategically placed to maybe whatever is in the back rooms, person or otherwise, will be able to interact with it, but also it will draw people towards the sound so that they can interact, which I thought was a really neat premise. And then my other highlight was the surprise life form that we see, the very large surprise life form that we see in the third act. And that was an actor. That was not CGI. That was all practical. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is nuts. Yeah. So I'm trying not to spoil things, but those are my two.
No, I know. Spencer.
Okay. Honestly, my highlight is like the third act of this film. It was very action based, but also like very interesting too. So from like the unsettling tone to just like some of the things that happened like in that third act, I just was super like just hooked. Like, I liked the movie before that, but I really liked the movie then.
I feel like that third act really does do a lot for, again, and I mentioned it, it does a lot for the build of where this movie is heading. To put it in the most non-spoilery sense of it, there is a ultimate, I guess, meeting of whatever entity is in the back rooms with the current cast of people that are currently there. And it creates this ultimate creepy situation that ends with this chase scene of almost Chuck E. Cheese horror like intentions. Mm-hmm. You don't really know where it goes from there, honestly. And mind you, there is some semblance of how that kind of transpires, but not without giving anything away. I feel like this movie is a fever dream of somebody who absolutely hates AI. Like, I feel like there's this floating theory, and I really do feel like I'm giving Kane Parsons as much credit as I can because of the fact that this had been a creation of his long before he got to this point. Mm-hmm. So there had to have been consideration and thought going into this well before the movie was made. I feel like this movie is almost like this, I guess, commentary on how much AI is destroying current man-made art to an extent, or just corrupting society as a whole, you know, and take that as you will. Like there's so much that you could pull from this movie as like, oh, this could mean this, so that could mean that, from a much higher like level of perspective. Again, you don't have to be a super intelligent person to go in and enjoy this, but for those people who are, you know, intelligent and use, you know, their minds instead of thinking about actual productive things, I think about movie theories and stuff like that, like myself. It leads a lot of what? I don't always think about productive things, and I think a lot about movies. I'm just saying, why are you got the grumpy face on?
It felt a bit like you're like, listen, it's good that you like movies. It's even better when you're intelligent and you like movies. Like it felt a little weird.
No, I'm just saying, again, it's just the logic behind, I think about movies a lot. I know there's people out there who think about it a lot. Could I be spending a lot more of my time thinking about better things? Probably. I just like movies that much. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
But if you thought too long and hard on this movie, you could probably come up with at least a few film theories, you know, RIP Matt Pat's channel, like the that really give you an indication of where the story could go, or even if this is the only one that he makes, what it means. You know,
they already greenlighted a second.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was cool. Very fast. I was like, wow.
There you go. But yeah, I feel like this movie really creates that experience where one hit is not enough. This movie is like a drug. Like, you ultimately will have to go back for a second viewing just to see the things you missed the first time. And then you're going to see things in the second time that you're going to be like, oh, I probably should go back and see it a third time. And I don't know. Like, my hope is that however Kane Parsons continues to build upon this franchise or even do other films, I really hope this doesn't become the M. Night Shyamalan moment for him. Ooh. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, gosh, I really hope not.
Don't jinx it.
I mean, there's no wood to knock on, so. Oh, hold on.
I don't think so, only because he's been doing this 4 years, and he's done some other things that aren't the back rooms, and those have also been good, from, like, the oldest view, which is something I mentioned in that one episode that we'll release in the future. So I think he's got, like... Now that you've put that out there, I'm really scared for him. But I feel like he's going to be okay.
Well,
really quick, looked up. So The Back Rooms released on May 29th, 2026. And Deadline reported that there's going to be a sequel on June 1st.
June 1st of what?
Of 2026. So there was 3 days between the movie releasing. And they're like, yep, this is good enough.
We're having another one.
There you go.
Another one.
Yeah, because he had an opening of $118 million.
He literally, at the time of this recording, I believe it's $210 million that he had grossed. And What did it was it made for like 10?
Yeah, under 10 million.
Yeah, yeah. Which is bonkers. And in juxtaposition to Obsession, which followed less than $1 million and was over 15, like from the jump. These are wildly insane, like, returns. It is just absolutely insane.
Yeah. And I think that's something to say about, like, the potential for great filmmaking is not being lost on a lot of people nowadays, which I'm absolutely excited about. And then the fact that, what was it? Did you mention about Mandalorian Grogu? Mm-mm. How the Mandalorian Grogu came out in a on a given weekend, in their opening weekend. At that point, I believe the Backrooms, or was it Obsession?
I think it was Obsession.
Either way, a a content creator-led film outdid the Mandalorian Grogu by that Wednesday of the next week. And again, with Backrooms is also becoming one of the more popular movies that's being made on a much smaller budget, and it's absolutely killing it. So I think one of the biggest things that we can absolutely look out for is the potential for future filmmakers coming out of platforms like Twitch, or platforms like YouTube, or platforms like even, you know, TikTok and, you know, Instagram Reels. The nature of, like, what could be out there is limitless, I guess, to put it plainly. Mm-hmm. So, but that does bring us to our roundtable question of the evening. And that is, you know, if you look at A24 has become the brand that has elevated what horror means to a lot of people, whether if it's things like Ari Aster's Hereditary or Ari Aster's Midsommar, or things like the Daniels, like Talk to Me. They have made what?
It was the Daniels?
Yeah.
That's from Everything Everywhere All at Once. I did not think that was the Daniels.
I'm sorry. Not the Daniels. I get them mixed up.
I was like, it's the Australians.
Which are also YouTube creators.
Hold please.
The Philippus. Sorry. Yeah. The Philippus. My bad. They're not related. Either way. So obviously the A24 has made a name for having been the compendium, if you will, for all these elevated horror type films. The Backrooms itself started as Amy mentioned, an internet creepypasta, but became a YouTube phenomenon, and then making the jump to major theatrical release. So looking at the lore and execution of this movie, do you think this belongs and successfully earns its place in the top tier A24 horror pantheon? Or do you feel like it's better suited to the internet culture where it first came from, i.e. YouTube? Let's start with Amy.
So as you stated, A24 really kind of built their bread and butter is horror films. And they have always taken the opportunity just in general to support and recognize indie filmmakers. Do I feel that other big distribution or I'm trying to say, is it studios? What?
Studio.
Okay. That they would recognize and give the same care and consideration to this project? If the tables have been turned, like, would they pick up on it? And I'd say no. In that regard, do I feel that this is getting more buzz because it is a YouTube, because it has a direct tie to YouTube, which is more readily accessible to a lot of younger generations? Yes. Do I think it cements its place because of that within the pantheon of, like, you brought up Midsommar, you brought up Hereditary. There mm-hmm. is like literally tentpole horror movies. The Witch was that.
The Witch is one of them.
That A24 has built upon. Do I think this has made its way into that pantheon? I can't say for certain, but I can say it definitely has the backing of a generation of internet-ness that literally has helped to continue to propel it forward.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think so. So a couple of things that you had mentioned that I would have to kind of double check on. You had mentioned regarding the movies that came before, like you had mentioned The Witch, and you'd mentioned
Midsommar and Hereditary.
And I feel like first and foremost, I think what translates most why people are coming to the theaters to see it isn't because it is a YouTube-based thing that belonged to the zeitgeist, if you will, of that generation. Because, for example, Marcel the Shell was a YouTube series that did not do well in theaters. Mm-hmm. And if by that proxy, that's what should have kind of been the primer for upcoming other YouTube shorts, I don't think it really holds water.
But you're also talking about I think the big difference too is that we're talking about something that started on 4chan. Started the concept it wasn't, of it, the but lore it wasn't, upon it, everything was built farther out than Marcel the Shell.
But the fact is, 4chan isn't what made it popular. It was what Kane Parsons did with it that made it popular. There's a ton of stuff on 4chan. If you've never been there,
I don't want to go back.
Again, 4chan has a lot of things that you could easily turn
into. Dear listeners, don't do it.
Easily turn into some type of creepypasta. In fact, 4chan is typically where most of these are birthed out of. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that Kane Parsons took that and built something with it, that is what kind of exemplified the generation. I mean, we're looking at a generation where we had Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared. Mm-hmm. We had Salad Fingers. We had things like, you know, all these different videos of like horror things that were popular. Slender Man, Backrooms as well, which was just a few years ago, about 4 years ago. But you already had a generation primed and ready and wanting to see what lurked on the underside of the YouTube, you know, landscape. And I think this one just kind of took everybody by storm and created essentially a pop culture hit for what it was. Not so much as because it was based on YouTube. So I think that's something to kind of to take note of, but also secondary wise, I think it actually does make, it's earned itself to be a part of the pantheon that is A24 horror movies. Because if you look at even some of the A24 horror films, not every one of them hits. Not every single one of them is actually a banger, to put it bluntly. And that's kind of unfortunate because that's the side of A24 not everybody talks about. Mm-hmm. But this movie is doing things that makes the A24 name stand out, and that is, it is breaking records, it is defying expectations, and it is creating it is raising up the generation that had been fans of it growing up when they first started watching it, and giving awareness to other creators who built the foundation for this series to be famous, to bring awareness to them. And it is bringing all those types of people to put their butts in seats and buy tickets. You know, I'm pretty sure I can at least say 3 or 4 names right off the bat that I know, because of how well they had a good time with the first movie, they went back a second time and even a third time to see the movie again. Hmm. So I think, not to kind of be combative, but I do feel like there is definitely gravitas, even at this point in where they are in their trajectory for being in the box office, there is definitely credence for the fact that they deserve to have that honorific, if you will, of being a part of that pantheon. They've earned it.
I'm not, so I think that might have been where I was struggling. I'm not saying like it is the top of the top when it comes to it, but I'm not saying that it is, you know, down at the bottom floating around just chill.
But that's the pantheon. I mean, pantheon is multiple.
Yeah, it literally came out of A24. Therefore, technically, as an A24 horror movie, it is in the pantheon of A24 horror movies.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, Spencer, your thoughts. Ames is trying to argue her way out.
English language and it's Greek.
Yeah, that's a great way to make a confusing topic. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel like it fits both, mostly because it slots into his other internet work. So it kind of like does fit along with the like stuff from the internet. So it does make sense that it like belongs there, but it also is pretty good by itself, like as a singular entity and with no further information, like it stands up on its own 2 feet and does a great job at it.
Which I do agree with that. Like, I feel like if anybody has shown us the fact that it can live in both worlds, it's Markiplier. With Mark's videos that he puts on his YouTube page, his choose your own adventure type experiences. And then with him coming to the main theater, like mainstream aspect with Iron Lung, and it also being available on YouTube, by the way, Iron Lung, he's definitely shown that it can live in like two different ecosystems. I do feel like, though, the opportunity for the bigger, I guess, casting of a net really does feel like that impact can be felt more if it's a theatrical release. But that's not to say that they can't do both.
Right.
I mean, let's talk about what the Amazing Digital Circus is doing, where they're doing a YouTube release of their series finale and they did a theatrical one. And people are going to be watching both.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that video, once it hits YouTube, is going to skyrocket to like a million views in less than an hour.
Yep.
So
easily,
you know, I do feel like we live in a world where we don't have to choose anymore. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. So wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Amy.
It always feels like it's me today.
Yeah.
I don't have a headache. This film does pass. It does have a story, even though it might confuse you, but mostly intrigue you. Chiwetel Ejiofor is, as always, a force to be reckoned with. And with such a small cast, you are consistently transfixed on what's happening. And I think that is not only to Kane Parsons' credit, but also to his directing and having such a veteran actor in a role where it could have easily gone one way or another. And they're both threading the needle in such a way that even though I don't have experience in the back rooms of the lore of the internet with the back rooms, it feels like it fits right at home. So for me, even though, yes, I gave myself a freak out headache, this actually gets
with no worry poops.
Stop it, for the love of all. I swear.
I think we figured out the title for this episode.
No, please, because
back rooms, Kane Parsons, no worry poops.
I don't want Kane Parsons to see that. He deserves better than
nobody
that.
Deserves to see that as the title.
Exactly.
Nobody should, because nobody had worry poops.
So even though I'm not going to watch this again, just I'm telling you that because I don't want to freak myself out. This actually gets a 4.5 out of 5 monocles for me, and I'm excited to see what else he drums up.
Spencer?
Okay, yeah, this movie very easily passes. Honestly, this movie is kind of a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of a whole bunch of sequels and Hollywood not knowing what it's doing for the most part, this is nice just to have like something new and fresh and like directed by someone who is... has a vision, you know? So like it was a great movie. I'm just trying to figure out what I want to say. It was great, and people should just really go see it is really what I want to say, because I don't want to give anything away.
No, I know, and it's so hard with everything that happens that third act. You're like,
I know that third act. There's so much in it. I really had a lot of fun.
I mean, it sounds like we just gotta have like an extra credit episode of just talking about
and that third spoiler.
Backrooms Act 3 only.
Yes, exactly. Sorry,
okay,
go ahead.
Yeah, so for me, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. It was a great movie.
I agree as well. Like, it was a great movie. It definitely passes for me. The story does come to not maybe a satisfying conclusion, but we do have some semblance of where the story is continuing. And now that I know for sure that they are creating a follow-up to this one,
we don't know. It might be one of those anthology type things.
Either way, the fact that this story... The world of the Backrooms is continuing. I'm excited to see what else is in store through Kane Parsons. This is one of those types of movies where you don't go in expecting to understand everything, but you do go in expecting to experience something new. And I think that's one of those rare and unexpected fun things about going back to the movies that I think a lot of people miss. When you go to the film, when you go to the movies, you don't always expect to like preemptively, I guess, predict how movies are going to end, how they're going to, you know, the trajectory of the story, the characters. And I think this was one of those great experiences where you didn't know what was around the corner and you didn't know how this was going to transpire. You may have had lore, you may have had information, you may have had experiences, but none of that was going to be enough to help you traverse through what this story gave you. and it was a amazing tale. And I, for one, had a great time. And I'm so glad that we got a chance to see this. So I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5 as well. I think I had a great time with it. I know we all did here, except for Amy. And she didn't get worry poops. So we're good.
Oh my God.
If you get a chance, check out this movie in your local theaters. It should still be, right? Yeah. Isn't it still currently? Yeah. It should still be screening in most theaters around the nation. So, but we had a great time. Thank you again for joining us. If you want to check out more of our great content, head on over to our website at filmlostverspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlostverspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever socials are, whether if it's facebook.com/filmlostvers or on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and
Blue Sky.
At Filmlosophers, Filmlosophy101, and on Blue Sky at Filmlosophers.social. Over at anything meta related, you can catch all of our extra hijinks, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene. Which can be found where?
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane on Scene on Instagram and Instagram only. And if you are enjoying Streaming Is for Lovers, even though we're getting forced to do it, guys, I just saw the newest one, and it's Brett Goldstein and Jennifer Lopez, and I need to talk about this. And it's something.
That doesn't tell us a lot.
Nope.
Oh, man. So, obviously, we'll be posting a lot more on there, especially with the summer months coming in. If you're also looking for where else where we are at, you can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Film Philosophers and give us a like or a subscribe. We definitely love hearing from you. So if you have comments about this movie or any other previous movie, let us know in the title section and we love to read those. Did you watch the Backrooms? Did you like it? Did you not like it? Let us know your thoughts in the title section. And again, we'll check those out. Also, if you haven't subscribed to us yet, subscribe. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
Yeah.
Yes, please. I don't need more headaches.
This has been a great episode, and I'm so glad you're able to join us. Stay tuned for the next one to come, because we have another great episode that celebrates a very classic movie that I think you'll enjoy. So, from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Managing Intern Amy.
Class dismissed.